Hello, happy Thursday, Teacher Mama. If you're listening in real time, today is a Thursday, which means we're going to talk about sleep again. And really, we want to talk to those of you who are just you still feel exhausted. And we want to like this episode is kind of twofold. One, how much sleep do you actually need? And how much sleep do your kids actually need? I think that's also really important because maybe your kids are also feeling exhausted. But one thing I want to point out is when our kids are exhausted, it might come out differently than how we feel exhausted. Like when we feel exhausted, we're really tired and lethargic and like brain fog and all the things. Our kids, you're probably going to see more behaviors. Less ability to listen and follow directions. So if you're noticing those things with your kids, then maybe it's time to look at, well, how much sleep are they getting? And I want to point out, you can go back to last Thursday's episode. We had this really cool formula that can help you figure out if you're getting a good quality sleep. And so today we're going to talk about how much sleep do you need and five things that could be hindering that sleep.
Do you wish you could stop using up all your patience and energy in the classroom so that you have some left for your own kids when you get home? Are you sick of coming home to a constant mess and never-ending to-do list that it feels like you're working a second job? Are you ready to turn off your teacher brain at the end of the day so you can transition into mom mode? Welcome to the Teacher Mamas Podcast, where you're gonna learn time and stress management strategies and routines so you have the energy to pour back into your family and the things that matter most to you. Hi, I'm Roberta.
And I'm Ashley. We are both wives and teacher mamas with a combined 28 years in education. We've both been that exhausted, overstimulated, and stressed out teacher mom, and we both brought way too much work home, struggled with keeping up on house chores, and did zero things we enjoyed outside of school. We realized that if we were going to live more energetic and balanced lives, we needed to learn different routines and time and stress management strategies. So we created a plan that made teaching, momming, and wiping easier and fun again.
If you're ready to find time for yourself, your family, faith, and home, go grab your favorite drink, a notebook and pen, because we are about to dive in.
Hey, Teacher Mama. Roberta hopping in here to remind you about our after school routines coaching. What you're going to get is an individualized routine at the end of a 25 minute call. And that individualized routine is for you and maybe your family, depending on what it is that you want to work on. So we want to help you with whatever it is that you're wanting help with, wherever that spot is that you're feeling stuck and you'd like some support, we are here for you. So maybe it's just that transition time between work and home. Maybe it's your morning routine. Maybe it's your evening routine or a bedtime routine or your kid's bedtime routine. Whatever it is, and of course that list isn't everything we could talk about. It's bio-individual. It is what is good for you. What do you need and how can we help? You're also going to get accountability a week or two later as we follow up with you and help you through anything that might have come up that maybe you didn't expect, because that happens. That's part of being human. We make the best plan possible, we start to implement it, and then we realize, you know, there are these roadblocks that start appearing. And so that accountability is really we're there for you when that happens, when life happens. So you can go to theteachermamas.com/power routines. The link is in the show notes, and go hit that sign up button now. So I don't know about you, but I think as moms, especially, we have all been through seasons where we're not getting enough sleep and we know it. It might be that newborn season, or, you know, our kids are sick and up in the night. And so we're up in the night, and you know that you're not getting enough sleep. It's pretty obvious. But what about the rest of the time when it's like, well, I feel like I'm sleeping. Why am I still so tired? And I have been through that season. Honestly, sleep is one of those things that has been a struggle for me personally and for my kiddo, my eldest child. And for a lot of reasons, it was because of what we were doing leading up to sleep, and it was really hindering our ability to sleep and stay asleep. And then we weren't feeling rested. And for me, that would come out with like brain fog, having a really, really hard time waking up in the morning. I think that's been my biggest struggle is when I'm not getting good sleep or enough sleep. That's my number one clue is I have a really hard time waking up in the morning, and I just don't feel it's like a couple of hours before I feel like that brain fog lifts. And it's like you reach for the caffeine right away and whatever. But when I'm getting good quality sleep and enough sleep, I notice that I wake up easier and I don't need that caffeine right away. I can wait a couple of hours before I'm reaching for my caffeine. For my daughter, her lack of sleep or not enough sleep really shows up in a lot of dramatic ADHD symptoms. She does have ADHD, but when she's not getting enough sleep, those things are amped way up. She has a lot more sensory processing difficulties, which then leads to tantrums and all the things. And so sleep is really pivotal. And I've noticed if she's having more and more moments where it just seems like she's reacting kind of in an overboard way, like this reaction doesn't match the situation and that's happening repeatedly, then that's a big clue for my husband and I to sit down and go, okay, what do we need to do about her sleep? Something is clearly, she's not getting enough, and what can we do to help her? So we can kind of go through these five things that we're going to talk about in a little bit for what could be hindering that sleep and being the reason we're seeing these behaviors. So it's kind of twofold. The things we're talking about today are helpful for you, but it's also really helpful for your kids. And so you could put on that detective hat and figure out what you need.
Yeah, so first of all, let's talk about how much sleep do you actually need and how much sleep do your kids actually need, because it's way different than adults. So you guys, if you're in the baby stage right now, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. Kidding, not kidding, because I don't want any more kids for this reason, because I am a crabby butt when I don't get sleep or when my sleep is interrupted. And this is a huge reason why my husband and I decided not to have any more kids, because I don't like not getting sleep. So infants need 12 to 16 hours, and this includes naps. So it doesn't mean that all those 16 hours need to be a night, but naps as well. So that's 4 to 12 months. Toddlers, 1 to 2 years old, should be getting 11 to 14 hours. And again, that's including naps. And I, so, okay, funny story. We recorded a bunch of like evening time routine stuff for like our very first episodes. And I still remember Roberta saying this. She used to write a like the number of hours that her kids all needed for sleep on a post-it note and stick it on their door. So she remembered, because it's easy to have this information, but then it's really easy to forget about it too. And then you're wondering why your kids are crabby during the day or why they're having those behaviors like Roberta talked about. So if you kind of forget a lot, just write it on a post-it note on their door. So again, those toddlers, 1 to 2 years old, 12 to 14 hours, including naps. Preschool age kids, so 3 to 5, with naps, again, if your kids are still napping at that age, should be getting 10 to 13 hours. And not all 3 to 5 year olds nap. So maybe that 10 to 13 hours is completely at night. School age kids, which is where both Roberta and I, both of our kids are there right now, 6 to 12 years old, they should be getting 9 to 12 hours. So we have a snow day right now. And
It's funny that we're doing this episode today because I was like thinking, how much sleep did my kid actually get last night? So my kids went to bed a little later than normal because we knew it was going to be a snow day today. And Colton got 12 hours. So I'm going to be paying really close attention to how he's behaving today because he is my little ADHD guy. He has not been diagnosed, but I can definitely tell there are some things going on there. And his, like Roberta said with her daughter, Izzy, his amps up when he's not getting enough sleep or when he's really sick, which is a good indication that he's not getting sleep when he's sick because he's coughing at night and he's getting the sleep, but he's not getting the good quality sleep like we talked about a couple episodes ago. And so that's when I see his behaviors really ramp up and his tantrums and his not listening skills is when he is sick. So that is like torture in our household when he is under the weather because it's not good. So he got 12 hours last night. I'm going to be really paying attention today, how good he is, how he listens and all that kind of stuff. My daughter doesn't need as much as him. We actually, so my kids, they used to share a bedroom and they were going to bed at the same time, but she kept complaining to me, like, I'm not tired. I don't want to go to bed yet. And so then she had the suggestion that she wanted her own room. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a good idea because then we can put him to bed earlier and he can get the amount of sleep that he needs. And then she can stay up a little later, which has been fine for her. Like she doesn't need as much as him. And they're only 2 years apart. So all kids are different. You just have to like play detective, like Roberta said, and kind of figure it out. I mean, she was in her room for a good hour and a half, like reading and journaling and doing all that kind of stuff before she was even able to fall asleep. So that was a good indication to me that we could reduce her number of hours that she was sleeping at night. Teenagers, 13 to 18 year olds, need 8 to 10 hours. And oh, you guys, if I hear this from my teens at school all the time, like I hear it in passing, I hear it when they're like talking with their friends in their classroom, like, oh, I was up talking to so and so, texting with them or Snapchatting with them until like 2 in the morning, or I was gaming until like 4 in the morning, or oh my gosh, my Snapchat was going off all night long, blah, 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 blah. So, like, if you have teenagers, please, please, please get that cell phone out of their room. Oh my gosh. I'm sure you guys know all this. You are teachers listening, so I don't want to feel like preachy or anything, but if you're not around teens like I am, like if you're an elementary teacher, like this maybe hasn't dawned on you. Like maybe you think your teenager is in their room and they just use it for an alarm clock, but I don't know. I don't know that I would trust that. So I would get that phone out of their room because it is interrupting their sleep, just like it's interrupting their time in the classroom. I could go on about cell phones forever, but I won't. I'm going to shut up now. And adults, us, we need, I think they say seven, it's at least seven, and I think it's like 7 to 9 or 7 to 10. 10 seems like a lot. But yeah, 7 to 9 hours of sleep for sure for us.
Yeah.
And again, we all differ too. Roberta, what do you get every night?
I've actually noticed that I need that 10 hours of sleep to feel rested and not have the brain fog. And I've noticed that's what I need. Honestly, if I can get 12 hours, that's amazing. But so I know that I'm someone who needs more sleep to feel rested.
My gosh, if I had that much sleep, I would be a zombie the next day. It
Yeah.
would be way too much for me.
Yeah, and that's my husband too. But yeah, I've
I'm good with
definitely
like
noticed I need more.
7 and 8 is good for me.
So let's talk about those five things that could be hindering that sleep. And so maybe, it could be hindering in the sense that you go to bed, like you're laying down and you're having a hard time falling asleep. You're just kind of laying there. or hindering in a sense that maybe you're waking up a bunch of times throughout the night, or you're waking up once and not able to fall back asleep for a long period of time, for like 20 minutes or more, or hindering in a sense that you're waking up way earlier than you want to, and therefore not getting that minimum of 7 hours or whatever it is for our kids, right? So like kind of those three things to think about. Am I able to fall asleep right away? Am I waking up when I want to be woken up? And I mean, if you're waking up a little bit before your alarm, that's fine. But it's like, is it hindering the amount of sleep hours? Or in the middle of the night, are you waking up? So the first thing that could be hindering that is if we have inconsistent bedtimes and waking times. And this is something I still really struggle with. Like I understand the research is there. I understand that it's important, but it's still really hard, like, to keep a consistent bedtime every single day, like always going to bed with at the same time, always waking up at the same time. That's a hard one for me to swallow. I know it's important, and I know that when I do it, I function better. But I will be real that I know that that's probably the hardest one on this list, is keeping consistent bedtimes. Because it's like you get to the weekend and it's like, yes, I can stay up later. But actually that's harming our sleep cycles. So keeping consistent during the week and the weekend and vacations, which is so hard.
Oh, so hard. Yes. And I guess that like, you know, it depends on what season you're in too. Because like my kids, they stay up later in the summertime because it's brighter, you know? So like I'm kind of keeping with the natural circadian rhythm of our bodies, and they don't have to get up. So I do let them stay up later in the summertime, and that can depend on what season you're in, you know?
You know, I think that's a good point though, quick to point out, is something I've noticed as well, and something that would be really interesting to look at more. But I've definitely noticed myself and my kids, we need more sleep in the winter, like more sleep hours than in the summer. Like right now I need that 10 to 12 hours of sleep, but in the summer I can feel completely fine with seven. And I'm sure that has to do with the amount of time we're getting natural light.
Right. That, and like stress is also for us teachers, right? It's probably a lot less in the summertime. And so maybe we don't need all that extra sleep to like refresh our brain because we are not stressed out. But yeah, I know a big part of that is because of our natural bodies, like circadian rhythm. We are meant to go to bed when it gets darker out and wake up when the light comes. And our schedules like now don't align with that all the time. And so that could be a huge part of why you're also feeling exhausted. I just recorded the episode on Monday about light and how that has a big effect on our bodies. So, you know, go back and listen to that one if you're really feeling like exhausted in the morning when you wake up. Like there's some good tips in there for you for that. So another one is not being active during the day. And activity, again, it can vary person to person. So maybe you are somebody who needs like 4 days a week of a normal workout, and then the rest of the days you're just kind of, you know, making sure that you get movement in. Or maybe you are somebody who just needs yoga 7 days a week, or maybe you need to mix it up with weightlifting and cardio. I don't know. Everybody's body is different. But again, play detective. What helps you sleep better? And then also, do you do it in the morning or do you do it at night? Because some people do really good with working out right before bed. It actually helps calm their bodies down and they can sleep better when they do that. They take a nice warm shower and then they hop in bed. For me, I don't know that that would work very well for me. Also, I'm just really bad at working out in the evening or after school. Like if I don't do it in the morning, it doesn't happen. So you want to make sure you're not like amping yourself up before bed. If that's a problem, if you've been working out and you're like, I feel more awake afterwards, that means you probably need to move your workout to some other part of the day. But if you're not doing like active workouts where it's like a 30-minute period or more of working out with weights or cardio or whatever, making sure that you're moving your body for at least 20 to 30 minutes. Like it should probably be, at least that. Like if it's just getting a walk in or whatever it is. So that really helps relieve stress, get the energy out of our body. Roberta, what else do you have to say about this?
Yeah, I think it's also like just how active we are in our day. Like if I have a day where my job is predominantly paperwork or sitting down, I'm gonna have a harder time falling asleep. Like Friday, I had like a self-care day and I just like did what I wanted to, which was like just watching some movies that I have wanted to watch for a really long time, but haven't been able to because I'm always with the kids. Like my husband took the day off and took the kids, and I could just have like a kid-free day. And I read a book and like a fiction book, and I like journaled and what. But a lot of those things were sitting down, and so when I went to fall asleep that night, I had a hard time because I wasn't really active at all. Like yeah, I did my workout, but I was sitting for most of the day, and that really impacted my body's like ability to feel ready for bed. But even just on a normal day, like if it's a day where I'm like outside with the kids a lot, or like in my job we take the kids out to the playground at least once, but like sometimes multiple times. And if I'm out there and like walking the playground versus sitting on the bench and like watching them, which of course I'm like as I'm walking around the playground, I'm watching them. That sounded weird, but if there's a difference in like my ability to then fall asleep later. So like if I'm getting 8,000 steps or more, because I like to track my steps, then I notice I fall asleep easier. If I have less than 8,000 steps, I'm like still feeling wide awake when I'm wanting to go to bed. All right, the other thing, the third thing that could be hindering sleep is eating a really like a big meal before bed. And this is something again, that is really going to be bio-individual, you guys. It depends on everybody, which is interesting. Like we eat supper with my in-laws every night, and we used to kind of struggle with them. Like we knew that my kids did better at night when they eat 2 hours or more before bed. Like their supper needs to be at least 2 hours before bed. If it's closer to bedtime than that, then we have a really hard time with falling asleep. So we're like, okay, we're gonna eat every day at 5. Well, that was a really hard transition for my in-laws. They're like, that's too early. And anyway, over the years, now we're to the point where if like we now have kids that are in activities, and so if we get home late and we have supper at like 6:30, my mother-in-law is now realizing that she gets like really bad heartburn, which keeps her awake at night. And she's like, well, now I'm realizing I need to eat earlier. I need to eat at that 5 o'clock time. That's really helpful. And so it's just like listening to our bodies, and it's not just sleep, but it's also like how is it making our body feel if we're eating and then laying down? Is it causing that heartburn? Is it causing indigestion, or is it, giving us energy? Like whatever it is, but just kind of noticing how many hours before laying down do you feel is appropriate for you and for your kids. This is a really important one for our kids, and we've really noticed it. That was one of the first things we changed when we really started researching how to help our daughter sleep better, which was when she was about 2 years old. We're like, okay, enough is enough. We've like tried all these things on our own, and we started researching and reading books on how to help her sleep. And that was one of the things that we started right away, was changing when we ate our big meal. Now, sometimes it's helpful like to still have a little snack before bed, especially for our kids if they are waking up in the night because they're hungry. So eating that big meal at least 2 hours probably for most kids before bed, but again it's de going to depend on the kid. But then also n recognizing like when my kids were little and they had the smaller stomachs and everything and they had faster metabolisms, like we made like a bedtime oatmeal cookie that they would eat before bed, but it was small. And it just like helped them stay full so they would sleep through the night. But it wasn't so much that they had a hard time falling asleep. So it's just like paying attention to that and like how much is too much before bed and figuring that out for yourself.
Yeah, and another one is having a bright environment. And I'm not gonna really talk on this too much because you guys can go back to the episode right before this one, number 175, and listen. It's a really short one. It's like 15 minutes. So yeah, but just so you know, having bright lights right before you go to bed, not good. And then making sure that you have enough bright light during the day to again set that natural circadian rhythm inside our bodies.
For sure. All right, so the fifth thing here, this last thing, is also probably a little bit of a sticky one to chat about that we have problems with. And I still hear this from a lot of people in my life right now, which they are drinking caffeine at supper time or after supper time, and then thinking their sleep
Just
quality is unrelated. They're like, well,
boggles my mind.
I can fall asleep just fine. And I'm like, okay, but you're waking up in the night and not able to go back to sleep. This is related. And it's just,
Or the
people have
people
a
who are
hard
drinking
time.
energy drinks all day long, or our
Yeah.
kids who are drinking energy drinks all day long. You guys, I want to throw up at how many energy drinks I see kids walking around with, and they're not supposed
Oh.
to have them in our school. Like they're like, we're supposed to take them from them, and I dump them. I do not let them in my room with them. I will take them from their hand and I will dump them down the drain. And then they whine and complain that I just wasted $5. And I'm like, well, you know the rules. I'm sorry. It sucks.
Right.
But, and I don't even understand because I think they all taste like trash. Like it's like literally drinking poison. I'm sorry. I could go off on my soapbox on this one forever as well. But I mean, for our teens too, you guys, like, oh my gosh. If
Yeah.
you're a parent who is buying your kids energy drinks, please stop. Please stop.
Yeah. And really think about, I think what's helped me is re recognizing two things with caffeine. One is that really the recommended maximum amount we should have a day is 400 milligrams. And that's unfortunately sometimes one energy drink, which is horrifying. And for someone with anxiety like myself, that is even too much. So the more caffeine we have, the more our body goes into this anxious state. So if you or your kids are prone to more anxiousness, less caffeine is really important. So I notice that I function best when I'm at 90 milligrams or less, which is quite a bit less than the recommended, high dosage or whatever. But again, that's playing around with that. But it's also playing, what we're going to talk about today mostly is figuring out like what is the last time during the day that you can have a caffeinated beverage and still have good quality sleep. For me, I've played around with it and noticed that it's between like 1 and 2 o'clock that for me, I need to be done. The only exception I make to that rule is I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, I get migraines, and the only way I have found if I can catch it when I like feel the onset, then I chug a Mountain Dew and take the prescribed amount of ibuprofen because I can't take migraine medicine because for some reason I'm allergic to it and it closes my throat up. So I have to like, this is what works for me. And so like, that's my only exception to my rule, but I think it's good to come up with that personal rule. So that's my rule. Like after really 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock at the latest, I do not have anything that has caffeine in it, with the exception of if I can feel a migraine coming on. And that's just my personal rule. So it's kind of a nice thing. Like, what is your personal rule? And play around with it a little bit, figure out what that time is. I do have some family members where they're like, I cannot have caffeine after 10 a.m. And that's very different for me. And so it's just realizing everyone's different. You metabolize caffeine differently. That is one of the big things that's coming out in research with caffeine, is that we all metabolize it in a different way, some in a good way, some in a not so great way. So really, really paying attention to your body cues. And look at that formula from last week, from episode, was it 174? And do that formula for a while. And if you're noticing that it's not what you want, I think it was like less than 85%, then really play around with this caffeine time and push it, earlier and earlier if you're not getting the sleep quality that you need.
Yeah, fun fact, you guys, I gave up caffeine for Lent and I only have a week left and I can have a cup of coffee again. I'm very excited. My tea is just not the same in the morning. I like tea, but it's not the same. And it's not even the caffeine, you guys, because like I've been totally fine off of it. I mean, it took me a good like 2 weeks. I weaned myself off before Lent started. I didn't just go cold turkey. But it's not even the caffeine. I just like love the taste of coffee. And I just have oat milk in my coffee. And it's not the same. Like I'm thinking of even just going like decaf because I really don't need the caffeine. So
That's a good idea.
it's possible. It's possible, you guys. And not saying, because there is actually caffeine in decaf too, but it's a lot less than regular. So you guys, if you're drinking decaf caffeine at night, thinking that there's no, because like I used to be that person who thought, oh, I could have decaf at night because there's no caffeine. No, there actually is. But it's just less. So keep an eyeball on those things too, those sneaky things that like to pretend like there's no caffeine in them.
Yeah, and if caffeine is something that you're a person who it really affects you more than others, then even chocolate at bedtime is probably not a good
Oh,
idea because that has,
yeah.
that has caffeine as well. So anyway, our time is here coming to a close. I think we'll just like the five things to really look for is, do you have an inconsistent bedtime? Are you not active during the day? Do you have a big meal before bed? Is it too bright before bed, and are you drinking caffeine too close to bed? Look at those five things and adjust and see if that helps your sleep quality.
Hey, Teacher Mama, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. If so, would you take 30 seconds and leave a review on Apple Podcasts? It lights us up to know this podcast is helping you.
Also, please share this with a friend who might need it today. Okay, time to go spend all that extra time we have with our families. No more stressing out over schoolwork that didn't get done before contract time. We'll meet you back here in a couple of days for another episode.
Bye. Bye.